G'day, g'day. Welcome to another episode of Not the Wikipedia Weekly. It's the 30th of July. It's 2008. And this is episode number 29. The 29th episode of Not the Wikipedia Weekly. I'm Private Musings, your host for today. And we've got our regulars, Derova.
Hello.
And Phil.
Hi.
Now, this is the first episode we've done since Wikimania. And we've got quite a few regulars on the podcast who have been to Egypt and back, and we'll be talking to them probably next episode or before too long. There's a lot to talk about.
As they recover.
Yeah. Yeah,
they have to remain near the bathroom, I gather. So, yeah, we'll cover Wikimania, and I'll just do a little shout-out, if you like, or a little advert for the Wikipedia Weekly guys who have got extensive coverage. You know, our budget didn't quite stretch to leaving the house, let alone getting to Egypt. So we couldn't follow those guys over there. But if you're interested in hearing reports from Wikimania and all about it, then do head over to the Wikipedia Weekly pages where they can fill you in. I thought we'd kick off today by talking around a little bit about this Not the Wikipedia Weekly, how the Skype channel works. What exactly is this thing that we're doing? If you're listening, you'll know that we cover topics related to Wikimedia and Wikipedia, and we basically just chat the facts and chew the cud. That's one way of describing it. But what you probably don't know is that when we're not recording, both the Skype public chat and indeed voice chats are pretty active. If you're a sort of semi-active or very active Wikipedian, or if you're interested in making contact and having a chat with other Wikipedians, then the Skype public channel is, our Skype public channel is really a really good way in. Derova, you actually, there's quite a lot of content work that goes on. And in fact,
yes.
How often are you in the channel?
I'm in the channel a lot of times. I often have it running in the background. And when I'm working on visual material, which is a lot, it's actually very easy. It's hands-free. I can be in a voice chat and shoot the breeze. And it helps to pass the time while I'm working on images.
Yeah, and Phil, you're another regular there too. So, I mean, it's sort of what I'm trying to get across to people here is that if you want a bit of a social, but you were sort of, just before we started recording, Phil, you were describing to me, because I'm actually not in the channel as much as I would like to be, actually. I'm not in the channel all that much. But what sorts of conversations go on, Phil?
Well, today we were talking about various assorted featured sounds and featured sound candidates and working on featured images. We make suggestions to each other. Sometimes we help each other on getting sources, reliable sources for things. I drug up a few sources for featured picture candidacies that Derova was doing. Advice is offered to people on sometimes on political issues, but more often on how to write this or structure this kind of article or what type of images to try to dredge up to from the public domain to submit to comments. There's a lot of that kind of discussion in general or what DYKs should be written.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what are gaps in our coverage in Wikipedia in one area or another?
We also have, if you don't mind my stepping in, we have some a lot of article writers, like people who are doing good article drives or whatever, and if they get stuck on a paragraph or they're just not sure how to cite a particular source or they want somebody to come along and copy edit, they'll link to the article, they'll link to what they're doing right now, they'll you know, put a link to their current material into the text chat. And then they'll get a little bit more. It's very synergistic and collaborative.
And in fact, just to describe the real basics to people that might not know, Skype is, I describe it as a little bit easier to run than IRC, Internet Relay Chat, and not that IRC is particularly hard, but if you've ever sort of dipped your toe in there and found it either too complicated or perhaps, you know, perhaps weren't that interested in what was happening in those channels, I'd say it's probably certainly worth a dipping your toe in here. I'm just looking here, and we've got 47 people in the chat room, many of whom, as with a lot of channels, just sort of sit there and, you know, are quiet for most of the time. But as well as this kind of IRC-type chat window, there's quite often a voice conference call, all sorts of different voice conference calls, where, you know, you can, as you say, chew the breeze and talk things through and get support or ask questions or whatever it might be. So if you're listening to this as a podcast, and if you think, oh, I don't know that I'd want to come on a podcast, I'm not that interested in the latest wiki drama or the makeup of the ARBCOM or whatever's happening wherever, you know, then there's this sort of parallel stream that I'd really encourage people to come along and dip their toes in, because it's quite a little community, really. Come along. All are welcome. So, and it's quite straightforward. If you want any advice, then I think pretty much all our talk pages are open if you're not sure how to get in. So swing by the Not the Wikipedia Weekly page, leave a note on the talk page, or drop by any of our personal talk pages and ask there, and I'm sure we'd love to see you.
May I put in a plug for our interface? One of the great strengths of Skype is how well it transfers files, audio files, video files, image files, stills. I've transferred files of over 100 megabytes, not that everybody wants to receive those, but it can go much bigger than, let's say, Gmail would. And you get a nice little bar graph showing you how much it's transferring and what the transfer rate is and so forth. So you're not just staring into some black box hoping that it eventually makes it there, and then it coughs and sputters and says, "We can't do that."
and that really, particularly in image restoration work, that's got to be, you know, just practically speaking, if I'm right, you share images with other editors, right, who then maybe help you out with their opinions or with indeed a bit of work and then send them back. That's what's actually happening in this channel.
Oh, yeah, and featured sound, candidacy collaborations. You'll have one person find something in the archive and another person edits it. Well, the first person is looking up all of the data, you know, in order to fill out the paperwork side of it. It's nice because you can spread the work around a little bit and still get quality results.
Yeah, well, that here's another us. Good.
Go ahead, Phil.
Let me just give another example. So, in the case of the first balloon, the Montgolfi brothers balloon, Derova found the image, I believe, and did the restoration on it. And then Shoemaker's Holiday then went and did the research on the units that are written on the archaic pre-metric units written on the document. And I went and did the translation. So the three of us working together, I don't know if there was anybody else involved, but all three of us, we each did a little piece, and then all that was brought together, and that turned into a featured picture. I think it has. Has it, Derova?
Yeah, it's gotten promoted. Shoemaker was also doing some of the stuff with the image restoration, because he's a genius with engravings. And I'm learning from him in that medium, and he's great with that. Plus, you know, both of you doing some of the technical research. That was the first manned balloon flight that took place in France in 1783, and I found a period, I guess you could call it a poster, describing it from 1786 that included the engineering data, but it was all in archaic French pounds and feet, which are different from American pounds. Yeah.
And I'll say, just on that, that leads us very nicely into a discussion of all things featured, which we're going to go into in a sec. But one other little technical advert is that I've now managed to figure out how to get an RSS feed together. So if you're an iTunes user, or if you're a, I don't know, another program which uses RSS user, then you can now subscribe to our iTunes feed, which you'll find in the top right-hand side of our wiki page, which is wittily titled our brand new cat feed. Get it? There it is, RSS in the top right-hand corner. And we're also searchable on iTunes, where I believe you can also leave reviews. I'm not sure. I haven't even gone to check, but there you go. That's news there. Now, aside from the RSS and the technical stuff and the background on the channel, we're going to move on to talk about all things featured, because the current topic in our Skype chat window is Don't Get Mad, Get Featured. And it's really in a nutshell, that's if you're getting a bit stressed or frustrated, or if you find yourself burning out in any way, it is a fantastic reaction to think, bugger that, of whatever particular conflict you're dealing with, and, you know, wandering off and going and contributing some featured content elsewhere. Now, Darova and I were just chatting before we started pressing record, before we pressed record, about the fact that I don't actually have any featured credits to my name yet. So I'm feeling rather guilty on that front, and I'm going to have a look at it. But I thought we might cover now just a little bit on the different types of featured content at Wikipedia. And, you know, obviously featured articles is pretty much the, you know, the leader in that sense. There's 2,161 featured articles. And if you want to write a featured article, there are some fantastic guides out there. I personally would recommend Giano's Fool's Guide to Writing a Featured Article. That's a very well-written, amusing essay, and it's spot-on in almost every way. But aside from articles, did you know that we've got featured pictures, featured lists, featured portals, featured topics, and featured sounds? I'll just give you a bit of the stats right now before we go into a general conversation. We've got 1,274 featured pictures. We've got 860 featured lists. We've got 134 featured portals. We've got 72 featured topics. And we've got 20 featured sounds, 10% of which I believe are due to you, Darova.
Yes, well, it sounds really good until you find out what the total number we are. It's not that high. Featured sounds are kind of the stepchild of the featured content system, and I've been encouraging a lot of people. The field is so wide open right now that a lot of the low-hanging fruit has left yet to be picked. I've got two candidates up right now, and these are really pretty obvious calls. I've got John F. Kennedy's Ich bin ein Berliner speech at the Berlin Wall, and I've got President Eisenhower's farewell address, the military-industrial complex speech. And these, thank goodness to U.S. government public domain, that's basically why we're doing those, no slight to other countries, but my own country's government public domain is very, very generous.
Sounds like there's some animals in the background who are howling their support.
Yes, the local puppy. Nothing I can do about him or her. So anyway, so we've got these wonderful things that really, they deserve a place in the encyclopedia. I mean, if you go and you want to read about the Berlin Wall, you know, now when you go to the page, you can get an audio clip of the full Berlin Wall speech.
Yeah, that's awesome. And when did you first start getting into featured sound? I suspect Rover has just gone to deal with the puppy for a moment. Phil, have you got any featured content credits to your name?
Yeah, I've got a small handful, depending on how you count them. I've certainly assisted with a few, and they're basically three that I put a substantial amount of work into, either in on the talk page or in the building the article itself. So the one in building the article itself, which I participated a lot in, his Introduction to Evolution, but I was also deeply involved in the discussions, and when I say deeply, I mean many hundreds of edits worth on the talk pages and the FAC pages of both Intelligent Design and Evolution. So it's a pretty substantial investment.
And are they all articles, those three?
Those are all articles. Yeah, I've helped with featured pictures, as I just mentioned. And I'm helping with something that should be a featured sound. But, I haven't done much besides articles.
It interested me, just chatting earlier, just to sort of let people know as well, I think this is something that's worth getting out there, that the featured article, Phil, how many edits and how long a period did it take you to get just on one of your articles or one of the articles you were working on? Roughly, what was your commitment?
Okay, in the case, I would say typically, for example, in the case of, well, it depends on which one we're talking about, but in Introduction to Evolution, I think I took several hundred edits on my part, and I had two or three partners that also put in several hundred edits each. I think I had the second highest number there. And first we went for GA, and that was very difficult. And then it took a couple of two or three tries to get it towards FA, each try taking about a month, 4, 5, 6 weeks. And then the final one we were successful on. And it was. So I think you
take my point that the FA is like a gold standard. It's pretty. It's a large commitment. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, and you know it's going to take some time. And we've already mentioned, you know, there's a few guides out there and more advice. What's perhaps lesser known is that certainly in things like the, you know, the sounds and pictures area, certainly sounds, it's a new thing really. There are only 20 featured sounds at the moment. So if any editors out there have an interest in finding out even a bit more about how to do it, or if they've got an interest in, you know, from political speeches through to early recordings, through to public domain recordings of important political events, you know, whatever they may be, or, you know, anything at all of encyclopedic value. There's some, well, what you might call low-hanging fruit. There's the chance to get quite a few featured credits and to really, really make a difference. That's what interested me about the sounds. What was the sounds one you worked on, Phil?
Yeah, I've got it right now. It's a song from a musician from Bermuda, I think. It's either Barbados or Bermuda. And Darova actually drug it up. It's called The Flag Sound. And it's a recording from 1940. And there's a little bit of interference where somebody's telling the person, after he's already started playing, saying, you know, go ahead. And that'll have to be edited out, and maybe a few other edits to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's going to be indicative of a certain style of music from a certain era, early in the recording.
Can you play it? Do you have a sound playable by any chance?
I don't know if I can play it in here in this chat, or I probably could if I practiced a little bit.
We'll come back to that. We've covered the sounds
maybe
there quite nicely.
Time I can do some tests and I can figure out how to play a sound in here. I know people can do it.
I just want to mention that while we've been doing this recording, I've been doing an image restoration of a wrecked German ammunition train from World War I. And I'm just about ready to upload it, actually. I've been working on a featured content drive this whole time.
Yeah.
There you go. Featured material live.
In fact, I might mention here as a little bit of a plug, Darova made a commitment, I think it was July 4th, to have at least one piece of featured content submitted every day since July 4th. Now, this is what, July, I guess, depending on where you are in the world, it's either July 29th or 30th. So she's had one per day from July 4th through July 29th/30th.
Well, actually, I've got one up for the 30th already because I turn over at UTC. So, I'm at 102 today.
You're also nudging 100, I gather, Darova.
I have 90 featured credits so far in 5 out of the 6 categories. I don't have a topic yet. I might co-nominate one soon. And I have 10 more candidacies up underway right now, but one of them might not pass. So, you know, I need to get some more. But I'm actually not in the lead. There is, and I'm trying to get him, there is an Australian, you'll be very proud, who has 107 featured picture credits, and this is what's amazing. He's 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the username?
Fear, FIR0002. He is a gifted young photographer who goes out and shoots the local birds and flowers and insects and, you know, just the small things around in his community. And he looks up the species data. And he's been editing since he was 8. Probably when he was first doing this, he needed a little bit of help, but by now he's very independent, and he just has he has a photographer's eye. He has something at 12 that many people don't have at 40. And very talented. He's very polite. He's a joy to work with, and frankly, he puts a lot of grown-ups to shame. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We'll have to try and persuade him onto Skype at some point, maybe.
Oh, I've been urging him. You work on him too. Great.
Why not? Cool. So that's all things featured. We'll move along just to to my next topic, actually, which is, what do we do when we don't know what to do? I think this is a conundrum facing Wikipedia on lots of levels in lots of areas. What do we do when we don't know what to do? What do I mean by that? I guess what I mean is, in particularly, when you have contentious blocks and bans and then the consequences of them, how the fallout, you know, where the cards fall and all that stuff. And I've noticed there are a few sort of conversations recently, both on notice boards and around the place, about it, completely independent editors who have fallen into, you know, various problems, and for one reason or another have either been indefinitely blocked or banned. And then when we try and have a discussion, for instance, at a notice board to decide what to do, quite often there's a tendency where, you know, the more people discuss something, the more the conversation tends toward attrition. Nobody can decide anything. That's in the case of editors' conduct, but it happens in the bigger picture too. I'm interested in BLP areas, as you guys all know, I think. And there's an area that it's something that you can very quickly get a strong consensus of influential and intelligent Wikipedia editors that there's an issue there, that something, you know, there's an issue there to address. What you can't get any sort of agreement on is any sort of structure or specific way forward, like what we should do. And that's when the arguments start and nothing tends to happen. We were talking briefly before the recording about flagged revisions. That's an innovation that's, we're looking at the German encyclopedia with some interest because they've got this flagged revision kind of test set up working, and it's working, and it's very interesting and very good. But of course, it's not immediately obvious where the English Wikipedia community can talk about it, where, you know, because there's going to be, as soon as we start to talk about it at a notice board or in a certain area, the voices, we get additional voices, and we get sort of the room divides into not just two angry factions, but about 22. And the net result is kind of this terrible inertia and this attrition that we can't confront the problem. We can't do anything about it. And I'm just wondering, I'll go to you first, Phil. Do you sort of, do you follow that at all? Is my thinking there making any sense? And have you got any sort of responses or answers to it?
Yeah, I followed it a little bit. I think the experiment on the German Wikipedia was extremely interesting. I do think that it really depends on how it's implemented on Wikipedia, English Wikipedia itself, what the response will be. What I would suggest that people try, and I've made this suggestion for many things besides flagged revisions, is what we should do, or we shouldn't be afraid to do, is to just, if possible, I don't know if the software allowed this, but try it on a small subset of English Wikipedia. Try it on a subset of 100,000 articles, which is a pretty big chunk, actually, but only a small fraction of English Wikipedia, maybe some in some special topic or something, and try it for 6 months or a year and see how the dynamics evolve, see if it's helpful or not, or if we should try a slightly different approach. I mean, there are many different parameters apparently you can set for and choose for implementing these flagged revisions. And let's just do a small-scale experiment so that people aren't really kind of afraid of making some immense change that maybe will drive off new editors. That's one of the biggest complaints I've heard. They say that you'll change the dynamic and we'll discourage new editors, and which are the lifeblood of the community, which I would admit is something to be a little afraid of. So let's try it on a small scale first and see, do we have to tweak it, or is it impossible maybe for our culture on English Wikipedia? German Wikipedia has a very different culture than we do. So maybe it's not possible here, but we would learn. We can't learn anything by a debate, which just as a private...
And does this go... I mean, that's the specific flag revisions, which I'm sure we will no doubt have to return to in future conversations, because it's definitely on the horizon, or it seemingly is so, isn't it? Although it has been for a while. But you've been involved in some, you know, reasonably contentious areas. Does the sort of the bigger picture thing about, you know, the ways wiki evolution, the way we can learn things, like I know that you've taken a look at things like the, you know, the assumed good faith situation and civility and how we handle that. Have you found in certain areas, you know, that there's either an inability or an unwillingness to take the evidence, if you like, or do the research and then actually change something?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair description. Is we have a lot of inertia here, and there's a kind of a growing tendency, I would say, towards leniency. So we should be, you know, that we really shouldn't impose any kind of rules. We shouldn't change the rules we've got and impose new rules. And so we just kind of get stuck in the mud. That's why I'm suggesting, you know, if you want to try something different in RFA, or you want to try something different in coaching, or you want to try something different with these flag revisions or some other area, try it on a small scale first. Try a small experiment and see how it goes. It's not so scary if it's just on a small scale.
Yeah, and that sort of wisdom, the sort of, if we lose the fear of doing something by scaling it down, so you're saying, you know, in the area, in almost any area, from flag revisions through to biographies, we could take a few biographies and try a different approach. You know, that would that be something you'd support?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say, sure, you've got 250,000 biographies right now of living people. Take 10,000 that are all in some area or whatever, 10,000 and try a different set of rules or some other set of rules for that 10,000 as a test case. Try that for 6 months or a year and see what it's like. See how it
goes. You've hit on something interesting there, Phil, for me, because my take on it is that the core problem really is having a rules-based system or having a rules-driven system. When you've got rules, it's not just they're not flexible. It's what you really need is the understanding of the principles behind them. And
that's
obviously
true.
What we can't do, we can't have areas of Wikipedia that have points of view because that, you know, so there are certain overriding principles. And I think we've got this trouble in the relationship between the rules and the principles where we've shored up the rules to the point now where we've got, you know, not really much ability to be flexible. And, you know, that's a shame.
I think a lot of the rules, if you really dig into them, have little bits of inconsistency in them. And there's such a volume of material that you ask the new user to read that most new users don't bother with them. It just seems overwhelming. And so they don't bother. They have a gut feeling the way it should be. And so they come on and they start pushing some particular agenda or some particular position without realizing they might be violating some principle or some rule or not quite understanding exactly what the consequences might be of some particular position they are promoting.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and we'll continue to observe. That's my, I mean, that question, what do we do when we don't know what to do, is one that I'm sort of talking with a few people about and sort of doing my own little, I was going to say research, but that's too posh a word for it, just my own thinking, really. And writing up a few thoughts, so we'll return to that. We're gonna wrap up this little this slightly shorter Not the Wikipedia Weekly with a couple of items. First of all, Phil, you've noticed and you've had a little poke around a very cool new search. Tell us a bit about it.
Yes. So there were several former employees of Google and a couple from AltaVista and so on that formed a new company, got a little bit of startup capital, $33 million of startup capital to start this company called CUIL or CUIL, which I guess is an Irish word. I'm not quite sure what it means. But they started this search engine. You can find it at www.cuil.com. And they're proclaiming this is the best search engine since sliced bread, of course, which you'd expect them to do, because it indexes three times as many pages as Google does. And so I thought I would try it a little bit. Interestingly, within the first hour or two it was up, I tried some searches, and there were almost no Wikipedia entries came up in the first 50, 100 hits on a number of topics. Now, interestingly, when Awa DeWitt tried the same searches about 12 hours later, and I tried them as well, we were getting Wikipedia hits. So I think what they're doing is, even though they went live, they're still kind of tweaking the code a little bit, tuning it here and there, and so it's probably in a state of evolution. Even though we can't use it.
Yeah, it's certainly worth a look. It's quite pretty. It's quite sort of Web 2.0-y flavour. It's got some nice interfaces. It's, you know, I like it on first impression. Of course, anything in the search space, you've got the the elephant in the room is Google, who are just so dominant. And in fact, Google is something that we'll return to in the next episode too, and we'll be talking a little bit about Google Knolls and their effect on Wikipedia. What is a Google Knoll? Well, it's a unit of knowledge, and they're the sort of the Google pages which may, I don't think they're actually in competition with Wikipedia at all myself, but they're certainly related in some way. So that's worth a look. I'd certainly give the new cool search engine a look. We'll finish off today with a little bit of in the news down here, down under. We had some Aussie public servants in Australia. Some Australian public servants were systemically sanitizing Wikipedia entries for the country's politicians and have shown MPs how to change their entries. This was an article written by a Sydney journalist. And really, it's what it says on the tin. It, even as, you know, a year after the Wikiscanner stuff, a year after people worldwide were exposed for having dabbled with their own entries, the information is still taking some time to drip through in some quarters. Phil, did you follow that story at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I first ran across it actually in a post at Barovas, and so then I went and looked at a good half dozen news stories, and I was kind of surprised to see the kind of advice the library there in Canberra had been giving, the parliamentary library had been giving. A lot of the advice really struck me as pretty naive and actually even bad advice to these parliamentarians down there, members of parliament in Australia. And actually, potentially very politically embarrassing as the press digs through some of the edits these politicians have made to their own articles, covering up scandals and things. And who knows what
Removing
is going to come up.
Yeah, it's one of those you sort of feel like, in fact, we've got an Australian chapter, or we're about to have an Australian chapter, and I think that may be one of the roles of the Australian chapter going forth, which is to try and get the information out there. Because it's sort of like, you hit your head with your face, don't you think, oh no, you know, haven't they got this yet, the kind of the nature of the sort of Akashic record of Wikipedia, the fact that you can see what IP addresses have done what forever, and certainly a lot of people don't seem to understand how public the edits that they're making, how easy it is to review them, etc, etc. I think also, to be honest, it was a little bit of a storm in a teacup as well, so it doesn't seem like, you know, it doesn't seem like that big a deal, so I think it's blown over a bit now, but it did make the news down here, so it's worthy of note.
If I could if you don't mind if I add a little something, that it's amazing how many people just don't learn from this kind of thing, though, because I've been dealing, while this thing has been in the news all over there, I've been dealing with somebody who was making exactly that kind of edits to, other non-governmental topics from Australia. And I've tried, and this person has sort of started a mini-edit war with me, and I've been trying to talk to this person and start a dialogue, and they've been kind of rude to me. And, and it's like, you know, this is somebody who's, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, assume good faith, but, you know, when the person's only edit to a high-level article is to say that a certain brand name is now the leader in, you know, it's sort of like, okay, every single edit that you're doing is promoting something or other, you know, reality check time. And this person's kind of, you know, does this person realize they're dealing with the Wiki Witch of the West? I'm trying to be nice. But,
in fact, I think we should now, I think we'll close the podcast now, but just something we were talking about just before we started recording was, this proposal, you mentioned reality check there, and in contexts like this, you do sometimes get the impression that people, you know, people need a reality check. I think we should close today's podcast with a proposed featured sound one day, who knows, but what did you call it, Darova?
Darova's reality check, wasn't it?
That's the one. And I think we'll have to wait till next time to hear it, because she's just gone on mute and stepped away from the microphone for a moment.
No, wait, I'm here. I'm sorry. Okay, Drew's friendly neighborhood reality check. And the purpose of that is for people who kind of get lost in the little wiki world and lose sight of the fact that local Wikipedia consensus can't overrule things like copyright law. You know, it's like, so why did you remove all the lyrics from that Sun article? Because they violate copyright. Yeah, but they're useful. Okay, so this is my answer to that. What were you thinking? And you can just save that as a little audio file and play it back when people need to hear it.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm sure there's some. If you want to, if you're interested in the featured sound angle, and you want, I'm sure you get a strong support from at least one member of the Not the Wikipedia Weekly crew. If you package that up and make that into a little template that we can leave all over the wiki. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back probably in a week or sooner. Edit the wiki page, suggest some topics, get involved, all of the usual stuff. Final thoughts, Phil?
Just tune in the next time and see what's going on. I don't really have any particular thoughts here, but tune in the next time. Hopefully we'll have some wrap-up of Wikimania or discussion of Wikimania.
We certainly will. And I think we'll leave Darova. We'll have to have one more Darova's friendly neighborhood reality check.
Oh, no, I'm just going to do this one thing because the whole time that we've been doing this, I've been working on a featured picture candidate, and I've just added it to the Western Front of World War I, Redditor 1916, Artillery Duels and Nutrition, a wrecked German ammunition train.
Wow,
leave it on a positive.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
There you go. So check that out, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!